as I wait, heart of God.
Hello, growth group participants. We are on our last session of 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5. And this is the last passage that Jonathan's going to preach on. It's our last Sunday in this book. And yeah, there's some unique content here in this chapter, and it's really important for us. It's important for the church and how it's run. And yeah, I'm looking forward to getting into it. As usual, our first question is an observation question, asking you to dig into things that are unique and interesting to you from the passage that draw your attention. And then we ask you to look at those toughies, those verses which you're like, what is going on here? And then lastly, to look for personal application questions. But before we get into our next question, Jonathan, is there anything you want to kind of cue us up or tee us up for on this last sermon or in the book as a whole or whatever?
I think it's really important that as he comes to the end and gathers all this material together, we remember, as I've tried to help people, help us remember, that what he's trying to do is trying to help people who are having extraordinary difficulty dealing with suffering, and that it's like real suffering, but yeah. How to get not just to survive it, but to engage it, almost embrace it with positivity and with joy, which sometimes just seems really extraordinarily difficult. But I think that because I've had to remind myself, and therefore I think I've reminded the congregation many times, because the situation was so difficult for these people, because their persecution was so painful and powerful, we need to take notice of what they're saying. Because we can't turn around and say, well, Peter, well, you know, you don't know what it's like here now. You've no understanding of what we're going through. That's true, but we have no understanding about what they were going through either. And so to take the principles are powerfully applicable, not just sort of, well, maybe we can extract a few interesting things. They're powerfully applicable to the church today. And I hope that as we draw to a close, these are the things that will mark us from having studied the book.
That's great. Yeah.
And our second question is about elders. The grace that God gives to followers of Jesus living in this hostile world includes servant leaders leading his church well. Peter wanted to remind the leaders of the church what their leadership should look like. In 5:2, the elders are charged with shepherding or pastoring the flock of God that is among you. What stands out to you about this charge? Specifically, in what way is a shepherd a good metaphor for a church leader? And what does it mean to exercise oversight willingly and eagerly?
Mm. So down in verse 12, and this is the ESV because that's what I have in front of me, Peter says that I have written to you briefly, kind of summarizing his entire letter to an extent. He says, I have written to you briefly, exhorting and declaring that this is the true grace of God. So what he's communicated to these churches in Galatia, Pontia, all these other places in Turkey Minor, he has communicated the true grace of God. And then up in verse 10, it says that it calls God the God of all grace. After you've suffered for a little while, the God of all grace, who's called you, will restore and confirm and strengthen you. And one of these ways of getting at this aspect of eldership, which seems to come out of nowhere to a certain extent here in the last chapter of the book, that one of God's graces, one of the things that he gives to the church facing persecution and just in general, is strong, solid, healthy, humble servant leaders. He gives leaders to his church. And he calls them shepherds here in these verses.
Yeah, I think it's true. I mean, I think that one of the things which is has been observed by a number of people writing about this passage, about this passage and this letter in general, is, as you rightly say, David, it seems to come out of nowhere, and it is probable that the sorts of churches that he was writing to were small. There, a lot of them may well have been house churches. A lot of them may have been meeting in for reasons that, number one, the churches were very young, and number two, because of the diaspora, because they've been exiled, and because of the frightening situation they were in, probably these were churches that were just getting used to being the church. And in a lot of cases, the leaders were probably the heads of the families whose houses, the houses in which they met. So the definition of the elders is a broader one than perhaps we would look to strictly now, when we have a more developed concept of elders. And so the encouragement to those who were in positions of leadership and in a developing church, because in all probability the systems of church government were extremely limited. That they were just beginning to take shape, and so the word that's used for elder here actually very often implies older in age, mm-hmm. and that serves to go further to underline that probably if you take the description I've just given, probably the leader of the group that meets in a church, in a home, is the older or oldest member of the family.
You seem to be implying a kind of a single eldership rule of these church communities.
Not necessarily, but I'm not many. I mean,
but I would certainly say, a multiplicity, whether though it's not large.
Right. Yes. I mean, I'm not. I'm. Mm-hmm. I don't think he. There's nothing here to indicate that he's saying that there's one elder in each church.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
There's nothing to. But there is a vagueness within it, which I think comes from this burgeoning church and their particular circumstances. So I think that, I mean, I think the principles that he shares here form a give us a principle of lead, particularly when it comes to shepherding, a very broad principle of context of leadership in general.
So that we're preaching not just to the handful of elders we have in our congregation, but generally to
people who have
whole church.
People who have leadership responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And really, many have argued that we all do, whether it be within families or within work situations or some. And we, in our church, in our covenant, it says, you know, that there will be occasions when we're leaders and occasions when we're followers. And so it broadens the principles of responsibility. It sets out, okay, so we have elders who very clearly have these responsibilities, but those responsibilities need to be reflected in all the areas where leadership is exercised.
Yeah, and it's important for the followers, for the flock, for the sheep, to be aware of the kinds of leaders that God has called over them.
Right.
And to be thankful that this is the kind of leadership structure that God has put in place,
and
therefore to respect and submit to them.
I agree, because and I think that this is that there are contexts where I don't think there are any good leaders who aren't good followers, mm-hmm. and therefore, you know, there are contexts in which we might be both. So there will be times when we need to let ourselves be led in the way that he's talking here. And I don't know, and the verse after this, he talks about young men.
Sure.
And most of the most of what I've read indicates that what the underlying meaning of that is not has nothing to do with men or women.
Sure.
It has to do with maturity, and that and that the implications of elders is people who have a degree of spiritual maturity, not necessarily. That sometimes people have a degree of spiritual maturity that belies their age. Mm-hmm. So it's not restrictive. And that that what he's talking about here, when he talks about young men, that the implication is people who, younger Christians, if
okay.
you like.
Yeah, I think this is the second time in the letter in which he has set forth multiple categories and then follows those categories with an exhortation to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Notice
yeah.
this. In verse
Which
1, I exhort
yeah.
the elders among you. Then in verse 5, those who are younger be subject. And then immediately the next verse, clothe yourselves, all of you.
Yes.
I could show you the other reference where it's the same thing. So
yeah.
I'm only just realizing this as we're talking. That second category of the younger seems to be distinct from everyone else, at least somehow. And perhaps it is spiritual maturity, mm-hmm. like you said.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, that's what, that seems to be the general conclusion that interpreters move towards, that this is not, that the sort of the implication of young men is far too, of the
yeah.
words young men is far too restrictive.
I didn't even really think about it. I thought we're talking about their responsibility to submit themselves to elders. I thought, oh, everyone's got to do that. But putting it alongside this verse, all of you, does seem to put it in distinction from all of them. But anyways, we also should submit
yes.
to our elders, anyways.
And I think that's to look at this in a broad sense is helpful to our church community in our current culture.
Yeah, where there are people that are all over the map spiritually, as is true all the time.
Second question is anxiety and humility. Peter calls on Christians to clothe themselves with humility towards one another. Literally, this has the idea of having others see your humility as you live your life, just like someone sees the clothes you wear. Would those around you consider your general attitude one of humility? If not, what are some of the things that you need to change as you clothe yourself in humility? What does it look like to cast your anxieties on God, and how does this relate to humility?
Hmm.
Well, you could have taken this question out of the text in my sermon very much.
I mean, of course, everyone's talked about it.
Yes.
Like, what's the cast your cares on, you know, God doing there right after we talk about humility?
But here's the really interesting thing about that. That,
mm-hmm.
Well, maybe you've thought about this before, but I haven't. Cast your anxiety on God. Cast your anxiety on the Lord. It implies that He understands that you're going to have anxiety.
It's a sin.
Not that, you know,
it's a sin.
It's
or
a
something
sin
like
or a
that.
Bad thing. You have anxiety. This is God. This is Peter saying, look, you're going to be anxious.
I mean, the Garden of Gethsemane, is that anxiety?
Right.
I would think so.
But so if you feel anxious, if you feel concerned, if you feel worried, it's not wrong. But God says, this is what you can do with it. Cast it on the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And so we develop, he's asking us, I think, to develop a habit, if you will.
Yeah,
of taking this approach to when we engage with anxiety in our lives.
Right. And then, you know, to get all nerdy on you, I suppose, in these two verses, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, casting all your anxieties on Him. Humble yourselves is the primary verb
mm-hmm.
in the sentence, and casting yourself is the... not a preposition, it's another P word. Participle. It's a participle.
Mm-hmm.
All ing words are participles.
Mm-hmm.
So they support the primary noun. So casting yourselves or casting all your anxieties supports the humble yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you humble yourselves? You do it by casting your cares on God.
And admitting that you have them and saying, I can't deal with them, will you?
Right, and that admonition is an example of humility.
Mm.
But, yeah, that's good.
So the last question is, resist the devil. Given the context of the entire letter of 1 Peter, suffering, why do you think Peter turns to talking about Satan and his strategies at the end of this letter? If you were to summarize Peter's counsel to Christians concerning Satan in 5:8-9, what would you say? And how can you apply this counsel about resisting Satan in your life today?
This one also kind of feels like it's coming out of left field a little bit. We haven't talked about spiritual warfare a whole lot up to this point. But I was reading some things as I was preparing for these go-through questions, and I came across some stuff which you'll probably address, which I found really helpful. And I'm just digging it up here. So I'm reading now some stuff on 1 Peter. As we have seen, the book of 1 Peter is about the grace God gives to Christians, allowing them to stand firm while they are living in this hostile environment. Indeed, Christians were being persecuted and maligned for their faith, along with a number of other fiery trials. Life was hard for these early Christians. As Peter concluded his letter, he wanted them to realize that Satan wants to take advantage of these hard times and try to make Christians waver in their faith.
Right.
Is that perhaps the direction you might be taking? Is like, what's this
yes, and
spiritual
I think
warfare
this,
aspect
it,
coming from?
And I think something which underlines that is the whole concept of a lion and a flock. One of the ways in which lions attack animals is they look on the periphery of the flock for maybe animals that are a little weaker, a little more
older, perhaps.
and they divide them from the flock. They separate them from the flock and then attack. And so you have this concept of the evil one looking at the flock for places where people are weak, so he can get in between them and the flock, who might encourage people, no, don't go there, and divide them away and trap them.
You know, that's interesting, because it doesn't say that the devil seeks to devour everyone, right? That he's on after everyone. But the words used here is that he's seeking someone to devour, implying that he doesn't have necessarily equal access to everybody,
right?
But that there's someone who is more susceptible to his attack than others. He's seeking after someone.
I think that even the King James says, seeking whom he may devour. So in a sense, it implies that there's a reason why they are particularly vulnerable. And he's encouraging us not to get ourselves in that place.
Well, we have given you a lot of food for thought, I hope.
I hope so. And I hope that this has been a really good this discussion of 1 Peter has blessed you.
Yeah.
We will be back, but not with 1 Peter next time.
Alright, see you guys.
As I wait, heart of God.